Welcome, Capital Raisers. Today, the tables have been turned. My great friend Vinky interviews me on the current state of affairs in the capital raising market. Join us, Vinky and I, for our strategic capital raise conference on May 10th and 11th, 2024. More details in the show notes. Are you guys ready to raise? Shout out to InvestNext, our portal of choice, and the Family Office Club, which is the largest association in the capital raising industry with over 4,000 ultra-wealthy investors globally. With that, it's Capital Raiser Show episode 301, and it starts now.
Welcome to the Real Estate Vibe Show. I'm your host, Vinky Lumba, a commercial real estate investor. And today I have an incredible guest and my very, very good friend, Ruben Greth, with me. Welcome to the Real Estate Vibe Show, Ruben.
I appreciate the invite. I'm very excited to talk shop here on your show. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it. And a little bit about Ruben. Ruben is a seasoned real estate syndicator specializing in multifamily properties since 2019. Starting in Phoenix, he excels in co-GP partnership and hosts the Capital Raiser Show podcast, sharing insights on capital raising and marketing strategies in his show. His portfolio includes joint ventures and private equity management in large-scale developments. Currently, he is collaborating with Richard C. Wilson on a book through the Family Office Club. Today, we will discuss an interesting topic, state of affairs and upcoming philosophies for capital raising. First of all, welcome again, Ruben. Let me ask you this question. Can you describe the current state of affairs in the world of capital raising? What is most significant trend that you're seeing in today's date?
People are having a really difficult time raising money. That's what's going on.
I mean,
if we were to boil it down, it's that simple. It's extremely challenging to raise, especially for things that a lot of limited partners and institutions and family offices and co-GPs and fund managers are witnessing right in front of our eyes, which is that multifamily is melting down right before our eyes.
I see a lot of hesitation and fear in the market. And that's the reason I see people just, you know, kind of shrinking and then just pulling back and not ready to invest right now. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So if you were to go to the Family Office Club and listen to a presentation about the state of affairs of multifamily, it's really obvious what's happening is the rates have gone insane. People are doing capital calls, they're falling apart. And what they'll say is like, right now is a really good time to hold on to your dry powder, and there's going to be an incredible amount of distress, maybe in 24, maybe in 2025, maybe in 2026, but hold on to that capital and wait for that distress. So what's kind of interesting is if you watch the movie The Big Short or read the book, there was a lot of people that knew there was going to be a financial meltdown within mortgages. Mm-hmm. And it never happened. Like, people just kept on lending, and all these people that had all these shorts that created shorts on mortgage-backed securities were waiting for the whole thing to crash so they could sell and make a ton of money. And then it never crashed, even though people were like defaulting, they were going into foreclosures. And the same thing is kind of happening right now. People are like, there's all this, these people that are doing capital calls and the rates are floating for a bunch of syndicators. There's got to be all this distress coming. And yet nobody can find a deal anywhere. Why? It's the same kind of situation that happened back then in the housing market is happening in commercial real estate. And people are waiting for this distress so that they can jump on the opportunity and attack it like an alligator and bite it and grab onto it, but it's not happening. So we're going to be chatting a little bit about when is that going to happen. Part of it is predictability index and, you know, what are the Feds going to do? And nobody really has control over that. But if they don't do something, there could be an incredible floodgate that opens where there's going to be a lot of blood in the water. I'm not so sure that it's going to happen exactly like that. So we'll discuss some of those things.
Yeah, I think I see that way too, because like Warren Buffett says, you are right on the dot. When people are fearful, get greedy. So I'm going to ask you this question here. In this challenging market, people are like fearful and just pulling back. How do you see the capital raisers should change their strategy to navigate through these challenges?
Well, I mean, they have to stay in the game. right now. They probably, so here's kind of what I'm seeing in the industry right now. As people are slowing down, they're launching ancillary businesses. Mm-hmm. They're launching new asset management softwares. They're mm-hmm. launching capital raiser programs. There's all kinds of capital raiser programs that launched this last year in 2023 mm-hmm. and that are going to start really building in this year. It's super challenging to do those things, but they're doing these things because they need to have money to survive. And you always hear about these guys that, like, they say, hey, if you're in the business for acquisition fees and that's how you're surviving, you're going to screw up the market for everybody because you need to have some reserves in order to survive this thing. And if you don't, well, what are people doing? They're launching all these secondary businesses because it's becoming really challenging to raise capital. And if they're not selling because they don't want to sell at a discounted price and they're not buying because there's no deals, well, how are you going to make some money to survive? And how are you going to stay present and front of center for your investors through this process and show leadership and show that you're sticking around? It's all stuff that people are juggling right now.
So let me ask you this question. You brought up a very good point that people are pivoting, they're getting into more the side businesses, right? Because like we talked about that, I think multiple times before, how in California, there was a gold rush. And I'm not sure how many people found the real gold and gold panning, but a lot of people who had the vision and they put their shacks outside and with the shovels and the buckets, they made more money. Right. So I think that kind of strategy people are looking into more because with all these technological advancement and more access to AI, machine learning. Mm-hmm. So everybody is like getting technology savvy these days. And they think with this, all these tools with AI, they can build something robust. That's going to kind of mimic the shovel and bucket example that I gave you. So what do you think about that? How the technology transforming the current market for the capital raising perspective or the overall process in this real estate industry?
Well, you're right. People are launching CRM businesses, they're launching AI businesses, amongst many other things. Another interesting trend that I've been seeing, I mean, even if you go back 3 years, as it was becoming more and more challenging to raise capital for multifamily, which a lot of people have been in, they've been kind of leaking out, diversifying, pivoting, adapting, shifting, evolving, going into sub niches of multifamily. They're going into development. They're going into RV parks, self-storage, assisted living. Some people have even left altogether and gone into hotels. People like yourself are even going into industrial. People are shifting, right? Because it's harder and harder to be a multifamily operator or raise capital for multifamily. So in addition to building ancillary businesses, they're also shifting their strategy for making money, which is one of the things that we did, you know, at my previous company, Legacy Acquisitions. We moved from multifamily acquisitions and raising capital for multifamily into build-to-rent subdivision development. And, you know, I kind of want to talk about, you know, this shifting, the raising of capital for different things and the realization that just because build to rent is a very hot trend. You've done some build to rent. There's a mm-hmm. lot of development. There's a huge need for housing all of the, across the country. That's not changed. And it can be a very lucrative process. But it's very challenging to convince a multifamily limited partner to jump ship and move into one of these other sub niches. They're less familiar. If you're talking about assisted living, now you're talking about a second business that involves licensing and people don't understand that. If you're getting into development, now you got to learn about zoning and all these other things that are happening and the forcing of appreciation and the raising of different phases of development and how the risk structure changes. And what I've come to realize is this, is like, even though like we went into build to rent and it's much more lucrative, in my opinion, than multifamily, it's harder to raise for because people don't understand development. They're just like, wait a second, you guys found a bone in the land and all of a sudden you have to do an archaeological study and that's going to slow down things. And, you know, the lending is not straightforward and lenders, if the prices of building materials and cement and lumber changes, then that affects your ability to receive tranches of capital from your lenders, and it's so confusing to people. And they're just like, man, multifamily was so easy. You know, you just basically renovate the units, improve the efficiency, increase the net operating income, lower the expenses, take care of the residents. Very simple business model, right? And that's probably why it was so competitive.
Here's what I've
come to realize is, like, you know, when I started raising capital, it was for small multifamily back in the day, got into syndication because I started this show and saw all these sponsors all across the country. And like the sponsor I was raising for was doing stuff only in Arizona. So I'm like, I want access to these crazy deals all over the country and these partners that are amazing. And, you know, I shifted and like I went out of Arizona because I knew I couldn't compete with some of the guys that were just crushing it here in Arizona, right? Like there's Rise 48 and then, you know, Vertical Street Ventures and all the other guys that are just killing it. I knew that I could never operate as efficiently as they could. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to go and find some great deals and some lucrative stuff out of here. And I'm going to present that. And I found that it's hard to raise capital for that stuff, no matter how lucrative it is. So I've kind of shifted my focus again and said, you know what? Like, I don't want to fly to Louisiana. My California investors don't want to invest in the Southeast. They want to invest close to them. And then when I go to like conferences and stuff on the East Coast and say, hey, you know, there's West Coast stuff. Well, what's your interest in? Nope. We love Florida. We love, you know, the Carolinas. So it's just like, I'm kind of navigating all of this stuff that's going on in the industry, trying to figure out who wants what. And I've decided this, like, I want to be super hyper focused on operations in Arizona. I already mentioned I can't operate or out operate anybody here because they're all really established and I'm not. So what do? You join forces with the people that are better at it than you are. And that's my whole thing right now. It's like, I know that I want to go down the street and I want to film myself or other people in front of their projects, which is how I got my start in raising capital back in 2009, just filming people at their projects. It was a different asset quantity, right? I was doing fourplexes and 12plexes, not 200 unit apartment complexes. But it's the same concept. You educate and nurture. People ask me, like, what's the secret, man? Like, what's the secret to raising capital? Well, everybody in all industries have to do the same thing, right? They have to educate and nurture and expose themselves to the greatest audience possible, make friends and network. That's the key. I don't care if you're raising for robots, you're raising for something else. It's the same thing. So if you're going to do multifamily and you want to do it in a specific place, you want to survey your investors, find out what it is that they want and provide them that. Instead of going and finding some lucrative thing that you are maybe very good at, but that's super challenging to raise capital for. And if you look at what that approach is going to have on you over a multi-decade career, if you can raise 10 or 20% more capital by aligning with the greatest operators, it's very cliche, right? Oh, I only invest with like the best operators in class, blah, blah, blah. Well, you got to take it up another level, right? Like, especially if you want to raise from family offices, because if you go to them with a mom and pop, here's what I found at family offices. Like, hey, you know, we're building 475 units. We got 3 subdivisions. We can take a $20 million check. Yeah, dude. Well, how many of these have you gone full cycle on? You know, we're getting started. We have an incredibly lucrative business model. They don't care. They're like, the dude right next to you has 17,000 built to rent. Why would I ever give you money when I can invest than somebody that's done this for way longer through multiple cycles versus you. So I've decided, like, if I want to spend time with Richard Wilson at his family office club, like, I have to give the family offices what they want. And they don't want mom and pop syndicators. They don't want guys that have never gone full cycle or have gone full cycle one or two deals. They want somebody that's gone full cycle for 10 years in a row in multiple cycles during multiple crashes, because they feel like those guys are a much safer bet, right? So if somebody was to come to you, Vinky, and say, hey, you know, I raised for a 45 unit, I scaled into 100 unit, I got a 200 unit now, would you work with me on this? You might say no, even though they're like have incredible momentum, they're doing good stuff, they have a track record. But when you compare that to what the family offices want, you're still going to say no. You're like, I need somebody with a better track record. Well, the same thing is going on with the family offices. They need somebody that is way better than you. So what do? You align with people that have what they want. And that's when you show up at the family office club. You don't show up with the mom and pop syndication. You don't show up with 4 years of experience. You show up with 25 years of experience. And now the question is, how do you find a partner that's got that kind of credibility? And how do you offer them something that you want or that they can sell and all that stuff, right? That's kind of what's going on in my mind right now with the state of affairs. Super challenging to raise capital, right? For anything. So what do you do? That's the question, right? If you don't shift, if you don't adapt, you're going to go down or at least not raise any money.
That's true, because you said it very well. If you don't adapt, you're going to be obsolete, basically. Changes the name of the game here. But you've been throwing so many golden nuggets. Oh my God, you said so many things. I need to go back and then ask you a few questions before we move into family office. So first I wanted to ask you, how or what have you noticed in the investor behavior? Because you name multiple asset classes. So I wanted to hear your experience from the investor side. How's the investor sentiment investing in a multifamily deal versus an industrial deal maybe, or maybe in a build to rent? Because what is the investor's preference? Why would they care? Or how they look at the deals, multifamily versus any other asset class? Isn't there like main concern is, okay, if I'm getting the returns, if it fits my criteria, whatever criteria I'm looking for, the kind of returns I'm looking for, how that matters to them, whether it's a build to rent, story unit, multifamily, or any other class?
You got to understand that the limited partner is part of the masses, right? So the masses tend to do what the masses do, right? Mm-hmm. They follow the herd, right? So if a limited partner is hearing from one of their friends or they're watching what's going on LinkedIn, they're supposed to be passive, right? But they're smart people. They're very, you know, they do due diligence. They study, they listen to their friends. They listen to market studies. And if their friends are experiencing capital calls and they are looking at the interest rates too, and they're seeing that people are like becoming more and more desperate to raise capital from them, they're going to take a step back and they're going to be like, you know, I'm kind of scared that I'm going to get a capital call. Like, I've seen crashes before. This isn't my first rodeo. Maybe I'm newer at limited partner investing, but I'm going to approach with caution, right? And, you know, Neil Bawa would say those kind of people are not investors. They're speculators. Mm-hmm. Because they're following the crowd. Mm-hmm. And if you present them with something that's lucrative, that makes money, that's established, and they're not investing with you, that means that they're not investors, that they're speculators. They're on the side. They're looking. They're waiting. They want to do the same thing that everybody else is doing. And if everybody else is pausing or approaching with caution, then what are they going to do? They're going to do the exact same things because they're not as smart as the sponsors typically, or else they would do the same things that the sponsors do, which is go find incredible deals. But the other part of it is they don't want to do the deals. That's the whole reason they're passive to begin with, is because they don't want that responsibility. I don't want that responsibility either, because I know I'm not as good as an operator as Zach Kaptenstall, right? I'm not going to try and compete with him. I'm either going to try and join forces with him or join forces with somebody that does what I think family offices will want, because that's my approach for this year. Like, I like big checks. And in order to get big checks, I have to be able to provide something that big check writers want. And so far, I have not done that. That's why my approach is changing. If you want to approach limited partners, I think that's becoming a more and more expensive proposition. Marketing is getting more expensive. It's a time challenge. The sponsors have to be making phone calls now. They have to get scrappier with text messaging, with better marketing, with direct messaging than they've ever had to, you know, in the last 10 years at least, right? They have to become scrappy. That's so this is what I'm seeing is going on.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. You know, you brought up a really good point, and then people are doing a lot of stuff, you know, to stay connected with the investors and trying to bring a lot of educational stuff as well. If they are not educated on anything, it's just like the silence on the investor side, that's kind of a deal breaker for you. If they're not coming back with the questions, that makes things harder too, a little bit, you know? So you kind of give them whatever they're looking for at this point. I think that's going to be the best strategy, I would say, in the current market. But here I wanted to pivot a little bit, because I wanted to kind of create the comparison between the retail investor that the industry is seeing, or the retail investor sentiment versus a family office. So let's take a little bit more into family office. I know you brought that family office word multiple times in the conversation earlier. So first of all, let me ask you, for the people who do not know what family office is, can you tell us in a couple sentences what a family office is and what it entails.
So a family office is a group or family of people, or even in some cases, single individuals that have accumulated an incredible amount of wealth that have wanted to formulate a plan for wealth creation, and they've built a business around this. Typically, where somebody administers the capital and provides them preservation of capital strategies and wealth building strategies based off of their particular goals. Just like, you know, if you have a regular individual that's maybe approaching accreditation status, they'll go to a wealth manager typically if they're not too familiar with real estate. The wealth manager will find out what all their goals are and then put together, you know, some kind of stocks and bonds program for them. So this is a little bit more complex, right? Because now you're, let's say that you sold your business, your tech startup for $58 million, and now you got all this capital. Like, you have all these people approaching you for money, and like, you don't want to make any stupid choices. So you form a family office, which is a wealth creation strategy and business within yourself that helps manage your money so you can successfully grow it and leave it for multiple generations and have it managed for your grandchildren too, right? Because they may not be smart enough to manage the money, but you don't want to have them lose it, right? So this is when you bring in, you know, an MBA or somebody that helps manage. A lot of people go to Richard Wilson to get this information on how to build this whole thing. And then you manage your money and then you invest it however it is that you see fit. Some people, they like real estate. Some people, they don't. They want to invest in businesses. They think that businesses are more lucrative. Some people are very interested in medical office buildings. Other people are interested in IPOs. There's oil and gas guys. There's, you know, real estate is diversified amongst all of the asset classes. Some people like specific things, hybrid businesses with real estate, like car washes, all kinds of things. I know one family offices that like shopping centers. That's what their whole thing is. And then they have this whole strategy on what the renters are going to do and how to make maximize the profits from those renters with hair salons and all kinds of other things. So this is what a family office does. I think when I started my show, it took me about 40 or 50 shows before I even heard the word family offices. And then I was just like, what is this? Like, I mean, I heard it and I was like, so there's a source of capital out there called family offices. Like, okay, so how do I make friends with these people? I really had no clue. I'm trying to figure out the process, but I know this, like if they're going to invest in real estate, they're going to want an extra crazy level of due diligence, communication, and investor relations infrastructure in place for them, you know, that details things at an MBA kind of level, right? So if you can't provide them that, you're wasting your time if you're trying to sell them your deal. This is what I've learned, right? So if that's the case, well, then you have to organize your, if you want family office capital, you're going to have to structure your business so that they want what it is that you have. And the only way that I think that you can do that is if you're a capital raiser, is by partnering with people that have worked with family offices in the past or have built such an incredible track record that it could, and have the all that infrastructure in place that it could satisfy the demands of the family office. So the family office is savvy. Sometimes they're like 70-year-old. Most of the time, they're older people. They like to do business with people with gray hair. So you show up there with completely brown hair, you young looking, you know, new deals. You got marketing savvy. You got business technology, you got this, that, the other. They don't care about any of that stuff. All they care about is like, are you going to lose my money or not? And you better be able to prove to me that you're not going to lose my money.
So let me ask you this question, you know, I mean, when do you think is the right time to go to family office? Because everybody, when they step into the real estate investing or they're in the capital raising game, I would say at this point, so they're always looking for the high net worth individuals to mingle with, to build those relationships. And I know you mentioned multiple times before that the best way to make connection is to network with people, nurture the leads, and give them some clarity, educate them. So here we're talking about the retail investor, right? So all these things are applicable over there. But when we move into the family offices, that's a totally different ballgame, because they're much more savvier. They understand what's going on in the industry. Like you said, they are not just real estate investors. They could be investing in stock, bonds, startups, gold, oil, there's multiple ways to grow their wealth, and they do have multiple venues under their portfolio or in their portfolio. And real estate could be part of that as well. So this real estate could be where they are doing their own deals, and maybe they wanted to connect with you because you can raise capital, or vice versa, that they wanted to be a limited partner in somebody's deal if the deal makes sense. So I would like you to shed some light on both scenarios, because I have experienced both. So I wanted to hear from your words what your experience is like in that space.
The family offices, like, when do you approach them? Is when you have the infrastructure that they demand, right? The ability to put everything in numbers and communicate extremely efficiently and show them numbers that, like, Joe Syndicator can't provide. That's when you approach them. When you partner with or have an incredible grizzled veteran status, that's when you show up. That's when you're going to do it. So what were the two scenarios? The first one was what?
First one was when the family offices, they have their own real estate deals. They do syndicate real estate deals themselves.
Yeah, and they raise capital too.
You. Yeah, and they might partner with you because you can raise capital. They love to join hands with you. If you have the proven track record, then you can raise this much. And that way you could be partnering on their deals. And the second scenario is just, you know, they might come into your deal as an LP too. When you establish that first relationship there.
The biggest misconception that all people have is that you can go to somebody that's effective at raising capital and convert them to your thesis. Like, hey, I'm selling this new ice cream machine and it's going to make $50 million in the next 5 years. You've raised capital before. Come raise capital for me. Like, dude, my audience has never heard of, you know, this kind of a business. Like, they haven't been educated and nurtured in it. You can't just, even amongst the most brilliant people that have built businesses that would blow your mind, they still don't understand this very simple concept that in order to raise capital, you have to do what everybody else does, which is educate and nurture and expose your product or your business. And they think just because you've raised capital for anything that you can automatically raise capital for them. And that's just, that's not my experience. Maybe for some super subset of, you know, the human species that can just raise capital for whatever, but that's not me. And that's not the majority of the people that listen. They're not in that category where they could just be like, oh, I'll raise for gold today. And tomorrow I'm going to be raising for Bitcoin. And then the next day I'm going to be doing venture capital. And then the next day I'm going to do medical office. And by the way, there's golf courses, you know, and these resorts in Costa Rica, and I can raise for all of it. That's just so unrealistic. It's not possible. Like, you have to educate and nurture people on one thing. These people that I find trying to sell and raise capital at these conferences, they have this, a lot of the same misconceptions that brand new capital raisers raising for 40 unit or 100 unit apartment complexes have, which is that, you know, like, I'll just go and raise capital from my friends and family that I raised from when I was doing fix and flips. And they realize very quickly that doesn't matter if they raise capital for something else, they can't transfer that database to this new whatever it is that you're doing. And they have the same misconception. So at the end of the day, you have to do what everybody else does to raise capital, which is educate, nurture, network, and expose yourself to the greatest number of people. But at a higher level, you have to be enthusiastic and confident, which is a part that's very hard, right? Especially if you haven't done it for something, or if you're in a new asset class, or if you've shifted and adapted and pivoted your strategy. So what do a lot of people do right now? I mean, it's very hard to raise from family offices. It's very expensive to raise from limited partners. What the biggest trend that I'm seeing right now is people are trying to raise from fund managers. I had this one company come to me and say, hey, first year we raised from a bunch of fund managers. It was awesome. Second year we raised from a bunch of limited partners too. And we found that it was very expensive. We want to go back to get raising from more fund managers. And as more and more people are being exposed to this way of raising capital, this mechanism, this business model for raising money, it's becoming a hot thing. The co-GP thing, it's gone. It's dead. It's dead. It died. You mentioned in the beginning that I have expertise in that. I can't use that expertise anymore because it's dead. So what am I going to do? I think the approach is this, right? It's like, go seek fund managers to partner with you. You see communities being built of fund managers that are working with each other to get better arbitrage and better leverage when they raise together for a sponsor. This is a really good approach. If family offices is a little bit too far out there, or you don't have the track record that they're seeking, what are you going to do? You can continue to raise from limited partners who are following the masses. They're not going to want to invest with you. Maybe they will if you're really good, if you're very enthusiastic, having killer marketing strategy, have the exuberant, jubilant, amazing personality where you can entertain people. Family offices like to be entertained too, by the way. It's a lot of people don't understand that. But I think a really good approach right now is to team up with other guys that have the same investment thesis as you. So what do you do now? You got to go find those guys. And what's the trick to that? Same thing, as meeting limited partners for family offices. You got to network. You got to network your brains out. So
that's true. Yeah. I mean, I love that. It again boils down to networking, nurturing, educating, making those trust relationship with people in order to accomplish something, because it's a win-win for both of them, whether you are on this side or that side, because it's more like a collaborative achievement for everyone. So we are out of time. I think we have to do a follow-up episode because we have a lot more to discuss. But at this point, I would like to ask you one golden nugget for my audience. Anything, whether it's mindset related or this market related, the kind of crazy times that we are in, how are we going to survive?
Yeah, pick your partners. I mean, this is something you guys have all heard, but just be very careful when you pick your partners. A lot of times you think that you're doing the right thing and you're excited to have new, bigger and better partners. And you don't realize that you can actually partner with people above the people that you think are at the level that you want to partner with. It's where I find myself today too, right? Like, I've partnered with good operators. I've partnered with up and coming emerging operators. Now it's time to partner with some people that just blow everybody's socks off.
Mm-hmm.
And like, what makes me think that I can partner with them? Well, I have to give myself permission to. Like, why is it any different than raising, I can go raise capital for this guy. Why can't I raise capital for the most amazing guys in the industry? Yes. And when I say amazing, I'm just not saying, top of class, just like everybody else is saying. I'm talking about like the very great, like the top 1% of the top 1%. That's who I want to work with. And that's what's available to anybody and everybody. Be careful about setting your expectations too low. Shoot mm-hmm. for the moon. What's the worst that could happen? That's my advice.
Yeah, I like that advice. It's really good. So this brings us to our rapid fire round. I'm going to ask you 5 questions. You have to answer in one word or one sentence only. Are you ready?
Let's go.
Okay. What is one of the most important things that you have learned in your life? And how did your life change after learning it?
That human beings have the ability to manifest. After I learned that, I practiced some meditation and attracted the woman of my dreams.
I love that. Okay, share your favorite book with my audience.
Favorite book right now is a book by Napoleon Hill called How to Own Your Own Mind.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one. In one word, what does life mean to you?
Self-actualization. I think for entrepreneurs, if they're not contributing at the highest level that God is inspiring them to be, they're never going to be fulfilled.
I agree on that, actually, because if you start living your full potential, there is no barriers, no limitations. What is your biggest passion?
Self-actualization. It's the same answer. It's like I'm always going to chase it. I'll never reach it because there's always going to be another level. But if I can improve just 1% on a regular basis, that'll take me toward, success to me is as long as you're pursuing a worthy ideal. I think that's the definition by Earl Nightingale. As long as you're in pursuit, you are successful. And I will always be in pursuit of a better version of myself.
If you could turn back in time and talk to your younger self, what would that be and why?
That one's very challenging. I would say just keep the course and have faith that God has you on the right path and embrace the adversity that you're going to face in life because it's coming.
Thanks for sharing that. And how can people reach out to you, Ruben?
They can find me at the Capital Raiser Show on LinkedIn. Ruben@capitalraisershow.com is a good place, but I like social media. Find me on Instagram or Facebook. I'm happy to network with you guys there.
Thanks, Ruben. Really enjoyed your insight here.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.